Hi there, Idaho Matters podcast listeners. We've been noticing lately that a lot of you listen to the show in podcast form, and I really want to say thank you for that. And we think it's great, and we actually want to know you a little bit better. So will you do me a favor? I'm hoping you'll fill out a survey. Just go to boisestatepublicradio.org/podcast survey. The reason why we're doing this is we want to make a case that podcasts need to keep happening here on Boise State Public Radio. So again, go to boisestatepublicradio.org/podcast survey and take that survey. Thanks so much. You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It's Friday, time for our reporter roundtable, where we get you up to date on all the news that made headlines around the region this past week. Joining me live in studio are Bill Manny with Idaho Public Television, Kevin Richard with Idaho Ed News, and Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press. Happy Friday.
Good afternoon. Hello.
Okay, let's just get the legislature out of the way, all right?
Okay, done.
So, get it done. So, let's see. We've got trailer bill, SB 1159. We've got Medicaid expansion. We've got the funding formula, and we're all waiting on the governor. Right?
Okay.
Yeah, that covers it. Next.
Next. Moving on.
Isn't that basically the way you introduced the last, like, month's worth of Friday Roundup?
I feel that's exactly what we've done every Friday is we continue to talk about the same things. And now we are all literally waiting to see what the governor does. So this last week, now he did meet, though, it's not Medicaid expansion, Reclaim Idaho. Mm-hmm. Met with them, right?
Yes.
So what happened in that regard? Because they have this meeting, it's all over social media.
Well, everyone's waiting to see if the governor will veto the initiatives bill. So the initiatives bill is passed. There's actually two versions, one that's much more strict and difficult, and one that's they call it a compromise, but it still makes it more difficult to get an initiative on the ballot. And both of those passed. And the trailer bill is the one that's less restrictive. It requires 24 districts you have to get signatures in 24 districts instead of 32, which was the higher threshold that they had passed with 1159. And so the trailer bill makes it somewhat easier than the earlier restrictive bill, but it still makes it more restrictive than the current legislation. Right. So Reclaim Idaho, which was successful in getting the Medicaid initiative on the ballot before, spoke personally with Governor Little, urging him to veto these bills. Mm-hmm. Based on their experience, saying that this is already a difficult process and we should not be making it even harder. And, you know, they call it the revenge on the voter bill.
Yeah.
For punishing the voters for daring to get an initiative on the ballot. And so we're waiting. The governor has until the end of day Monday to either sign or veto. He could do it at any
time.
Or nothing. Yeah, that's another possibility, is that he could just not sign it and then it would pass.
Okay.
His signature.
Is that the case for all of the bills or just SB 1159?
It's the case for any bill. I mean, that's the governor's non-veto, non-signing option. It's used occasionally.
But it becomes law without his signature.
Right.
If he doesn't veto it.
And then where with Medicaid expansion, where are we? Because we are waiting as well, correct? When does he have...
Well, actually, that's still going on, right? Actually, right now, Senate is going to reconvene at 1:30 this afternoon to vote on a bill that has work requirements embedded in it.
I'm just looking at my phone. This is what happened at noon. So if you're listening to this at 8, it may be outdated anyway. So the Senate committee, according to the Associated Press, has declined to go along with the House's amendments to the Medicaid bill, the House amended version that was passed late Thursday afternoon. That doesn't necessarily mean that the Senate will follow suit. That's just the recommendation recommendation not to concur with the amendments coming out of committee. So we'll see what happens this afternoon. We'll see what happens Monday.
This is the bill that's putting K in chaotic, right?
Right.
I mean, it's where is it going to end up? Nobody knows. And I mean, Kevin is down there every day. I'm just curious. Does this feel more chaotic than the end of days in previous sessions?
Like the end of days.
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, we make it sound so ominous. We'll all get through this somehow. No, I think it's chaotic for a lot of reasons. I think the Medicaid issue is really difficult for legislators to figure out. And I think there's a lot of personal feelings wrapped up in this because the 7 years of not addressing this as a legislature and having an initiative pass and pass fairly handily that called the legislature out for failing to act on this. I think that's certainly making it more complicated. And I think the initiatives bills, the two versions of the initiatives bills, this is really kind of the test to see what the relationship is right now and what the relationship is going to be going forward between the governor and the legislature.
And so between the legislature and the citizens, right?
I mean, well, right. How about that?
This could, I mean, they've already sent the one bill to the governor to change the way you get initiatives on the ballot. If the legislature makes this a really painful Medicaid expansion, there's a lot of people who are going to take that very personally, including the people who met with the governor who got this thing on the ballot.
Well, and even if they go through with this work requirement with Medicaid expansion, judges in Arkansas and Kentucky said you can't do that already. So we could see a lawsuit here in Idaho for all intents and purposes.
You could very easily see a lawsuit over Medicaid expansion. And if the initiative bills become law with or without the governor's signature, you will almost certainly see a lawsuit on that. I mean, that's basically been guaranteed by opponents.
So the what strikes me as odd about this and other late session chaos is, you know, we all wait around to find out what the governor thinks. And I just wonder, why doesn't the governor tell us early on what he thinks? And so we could save some of this by the legislators knowing what will and won't pass muster with the governor, and then they can pass a bill like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, Donald Trump doesn't hide his feelings about a bill that he's going to veto.
What?
Why in Idaho do we play this kind of peekaboo game? I've never understood it, and this session just feels very odd to me.
Well, it's very much a continuation of Governor Otter's style. And his purview was, you know, we want the legislators to come up with their own views and ideas and don't want them to be hindered by what the governor may or may not do. And you know, some people respected that he was able to step out of the way and let the legislators legislate.
And there is this very kind of official and formal and respectful relationship between the legislature and the governor. You know, the gentleman on the second floor, and he can't come to the, you know, he can't come to the body without permission. So, I mean, there is this kind of these rules that you know, guarantee that we smoothly work it out. But in this case, it would help, right? I mean, we don't know what the heck is going to happen, and it would help, I think, if we knew from the governor what he'll accept.
Well, we'll know when he lets us know, right? So there's actually other things we have to get to, shockingly, besides the legislature. But part of this is the legislature as well. Let's talk about urban renewal and a bill that would alter how urban renewal is done. Is that correct, Scott?
That is right. So this is another bill that is headed to the governor for his decision. But this is a bill that would require a vote of the public if $1 million or more of urban renewal dollars is used in a project and it is used in 51% or more of the funding of the project. Kind of a convoluted, but essentially it's...
Yeah, because that makes sense.
Well, it's a
I mean,
way...
What I mean by that is it's hard to understand.
Yeah. And really, essentially, it's legislation that is intended to prevent large projects like a parking garage or a library or a stadium, just hypothetically, from being...
just as examples that might be out there, right?
Being built using urban renewal dollars as a way to get around voter approval. And so this has passed the House and the Senate and now goes to the governor. And again, we don't know how he is going to rule on this.
And he has until when?
Oh, this one, I think this was Wednesday. I think
this week,
is another
right?
one. Yeah, this was this week. Oh. And I think he's got until Monday as well.
So he's got a lot of reading to do over the weekend? Yeah.
I think instead of bringing reporters in, you should bring in people for a seance and we can actually try to divine what's going to happen next.
This one, I think he probably is going to go along with the legislature. He went along with the legislature on the concealed carry bill that allows 18-year-olds and older to conceal carry within cities without a permit. Mm. And he signed that legislation this week. So.
Another interesting thing, Scott, and you brought this to my attention, a new law about bounty hunters. because or who there was, wait, you
we
did,
both,
Bill.
I think
okay.
I did, yes.
So this is interesting because they will now be required to wear badges but notify a sheriff before they basically arrest someone. And this had to have come from that incident, what, about a within the last
been,
year or two?
There's been three or four weird incidents, including eastern Idaho and a couple lesser ones here, and where bounty hunters just were out of control. And I think some people feel like even endangering the public. So the notion is that you're gonna rein these guys in. They're going to have some kind of official ID so that someone who is the recipient of their action can recognize them. And then they also have to alert the sheriff in the county mm-hmm. that they're about to do what they're going to do. So that when people start calling and objecting, that law enforcement will know what's about to go down. It seems like a small step to try to rein in what has been a fairly dramatic problem in some places.
Because people have to understand. I mean, they come in, they draw guns. This is a serious situation, but yet no identification. And then the sheriff's office may not even know that this is happening.
And I think, people have seen these TV shows,
Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Yes. And so I think we're all a little more familiar now with what's going on than we probably would have been a few years ago, and recognize that this is a case where a little bit of transparency will help a lot.
And before we head into break, Kevin, maybe a new president will be named at one of the universities that's been patiently waiting for a new president.
Wait, let's get the crystal ball out.
Yeah.
No, this will actually happen, according to the State Board of Education. The board will meet on Thursday to decide on a new president for the University of Idaho. That president will then be introduced to the university community up in Moscow on Thursday. No word yet on what kind of timetable there is for a new president at Boise State University, but, one step at a time. Mm-hmm. State Board has very high-profile hires to make here in a very short amount of time. So Thursday we'll know who the next president of the University of Idaho is going to be.
Now, are we sure about that? Because the last time they said there would be one for Boise State, they were going to make an announcement, and they did make an announcement that there wasn't one.
Right. So I kind of couched it in my blog saying that the board is expected to name a president on Thursday because we expect that to happen. But
they are saying
I expect the sun to rise tomorrow too, and I think that's certainly going to happen.
That's a
almost
given.
Certain.
That's,
but they're almost saying, certainly going
to
happen.
They're saying they will have a person to introduce, right? So this sounds a little more definite than the last time at Boise State, which was a decision to make.
It would be extremely awkward to have a meeting for the university community and no president to address the university community. That would be kind of a YouTube moment for the University of Idaho, and probably not a good
YouTube moment
for the university. So for the sake of the university in that regard, let's hope that, as expected, the board comes up with
an announcement next Thursday. All right. We're continuing our Friday Reporter Roundtable. My guest today, Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News, Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press, and Bill Manny with Idaho Public Television. Bill, you brought this up, sent me an email about this. The MAGA incident in Middleton that happened back in October got so much press, made national, international headlines. This was, to quickly get people updated, some faculty and staff at Middleton Elementary School
dressed up in costumes from Mexico and took their pictures and with a sign that said "Make America Great Again," and it was a huge outcry and a huge backlash and a huge black eye for Middleton. And in their defense, they have there was a Hispanic astronaut who spoke out at the time, and they have since invited him to campus. Both the Statesman and Scott's folks reported about his visit. He was very open. He was very direct, but it seems to have been a good community building moment where he talked about some of those very issues.
Yeah, at the time he had tweeted out, "Hey, Middleton, I'll be happy to come speak to your school," and Middleton took him up on it, and he did speak with several elementary school classes and, said some things that I think were just really important to hear, directly related to, we're not all wearing sombreros and ponchos and have big mustaches and taking a siesta under a cactus,
mm-hmm.
That this kind of stereotyping has to stop. And here's a guy who has been to the International Space Station, you know.
Right.
So it was a really, I think it was a good healing moment for Middleton.
Yeah, he was addressing those cliches that had been expressed in those photographs, and it just strikes me that there was a group in the community, even till now, who was making the point that they didn't think that the folks in Middleton really got it, and that, you know, there were these apologies, there was this kind of papering over, but there was this sense that they still didn't really understand why people felt as deeply as they felt about that. So I think anything that's going to help us get back to where we ought to be is a good step. Mm-hmm.
And having someone who's willing to come in and talk candidly and directly, sometimes that's what you need. You know?
And a great role model, right?
Yeah, yeah. Right. Kevin, where are we with the funding formula? I know you've been following this. Kevin looks a little tired.
Yeah,
I forgot to ask.
That is actually one thing that is basically resolved. So both houses passed what we've taken to call funding formula light, because it won't change the way a single dollar is distributed to the schools. What it will do is sort of set some of the parameters, define some of the student groups, require schools to turn in data, all with the idea of getting better information, better data, more consistent data that could affect and inform the writing of a new school funding formula in 2020 or sometime after. Yeah, just when it looked like nothing was going to happen on this issue at all, this sort of definitions bill, mm-hmm. this funding formula light, passed fairly quickly. It's on the way to the governor's desk. And I think it's one of those issues, and you see this sometimes towards the end of a legislative session when other things are going on, when other things are keeping the legislature in town, i.e. Medicaid, i.e. the initiatives bill. You have legislators who can maybe take a step back and look at an issue that looked like it was mired in gridlock and say, well, what can we do here? And I think that was sort of the prevailing sentiment from the legislators who worked on this is, well, let's get something in place. Let's make some progress to set the stage for future discussions.
Make some forward movement in that. Bill, a Friday Reporter Roundtable with you would not be a Friday Reporter Roundtable unless we talked about marijuana. So...
that kid from Pendleton.
Yeah, that kid from Pendleton. So the legislature is looking at making interstate transport of hemp through Idaho legal, right?
Yeah, but they don't seem to know exactly what they're doing, I think. But so there's this issue with whether a legal hemp distributor can transport their legal product through Idaho where it's illegal. So that's one issue, right? The other issue is, you know, there's this potential market that Idaho farmers and businesses could be tapping if they could be participating in hemp. So there's one bill that would allow the transportation through, which apparently is squeaking toward passage, and there's still debate over whether Idaho is going to look at being able to produce hemp in the state.
Well, it looks like, again, and I'm just, you know, again, I'm lost without my Twitter feed and my phone because
it's because everything moves so fast right now.
So according to Nathan Brown over at the Post Register in Idaho Falls, the House did pass a bill this morning. It's very narrowly focused that would allow the interstate transport of hemp. So you won't have, if this becomes law, you would at least not have hemp fugitives out there.
But we're not likely to address the bigger issue, the Judy Boyle bill about legalizing production here.
Legalizing the production of hemp and getting into anything about CBD oil. I think this is, you know, this just addresses the interstate commerce aspect.
And I guess the little postscript is that, you know, we've talked a couple different times on these shows about what's going on in Oregon, and it looks like it's full steam ahead in Ontario, mm-hmm. right? You know, that they've legalized the sale now. Businesses developing, and so I think Idaho is going to continue to kind of watch what's happening on its borders, and at some point we're going to have to deal with this issue of being the island of prohibition in a sea of mm-hmm. you know.
Well, and we are an island. I mean, even now, when you just, even if you look at hemp and marijuana, I mean, even Utah passed use of medical
marijuana. Yeah.
So it's fascinating to just watch this, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think
Scott.
A lot of people are happy with that. They're
Oh, you know, I agree.
This is, yeah, we should be an island. We shouldn't be becoming like everybody else, and we should be standing firm in our principles. And I think there are a lot of people who are very happy that we're an island.
And taking the step to deal with a case where our regulations might affect the commerce in other states. So, you know, we're acknowledging.
Right, they solved that problem.
Right, they're solving that one.
And elephant in the room. I mean, this is a big reason why you've had this big debate all session about initiatives and tightening up the initiatives process. Mm-hmm. It's not just a reaction to the Medicaid initiative passing. It's in anticipation of what other issues legislators really do not want to see addressed mm-hmm. through initiative, such as marijuana, but you could add others to the list mm-hmm. Of issues that the legislature has taken no action on that a sizable population or segment of the population would like to see them act on.
That's a good point, Kevin. Well, and also when we go back to this interstate transportation, I mean, we just saw that. You're right. Hemp fugitives. I mean, that is what happened with the transportation of that large load of hemp. But I wonder, too, if Idaho stayed the way that it is right now, where it was illegal to do that, there are other interstates. You don't necessarily have to go through Idaho.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It might be a little trickier to get around, but how would that potentially affect our commerce?
Well, I mean, if enough people, you know, get arrested and lose their loads, they'll find a way around it. And so there would be you would think there'd be some effect on Idaho commerce if truck stops and mm-hmm. and you know other businesses rely on trucking were to see that diminish. I suspect that's less of a concern to our legislators than just, you know, not wanting to be a giant obstacle in interstate commerce.
Get us updated on what's going on with the anti-camping ordinance in Boise, because an appeals court has sent this challenge back to district court, Scott.
Right. And so this has to do with Boise's ordinance that essentially makes sleeping on the street in a public place illegal and would cite homeless people for sleeping on the street. And the city of Boise has been sued for this, and it's still making its way through the court. And so there is this ruling that sent it back to a lower court to reconsider some issues. But the interesting point in all this is, you know, that this lower court had ruled that this was cruel and unusual punishment, that if there is if somebody is sleeping on the street because they can't find another place to sleep, whether by their own means or whether the shelters are all filled up, citing them is just cruel and unusual punishment. That's the position that the court has taken. The city of Boise has tried to tweak its citation ordinance to say that if we can cite a homeless person if there is still room at some of these shelters. So in other words, if a homeless person has an ability to go into a shelter and stay there for the night, then we can cite that person. Mm. But there's all sorts of legal machinations with that as well, because, well, what if this person is barred from going into the Boise Rescue Mission? Or what if this person is still using drugs or still drinking and they are barred from going to the Boise Rescue Mission? And then, you know, you could say, well, Boise Rescue Mission still has 20 beds, but if a person can't access those beds because of those rules, then they're still caught out in the cold. We're this case has a lot of complicated elements to it, and we're still waiting to see mm-hmm. how the courts are going to finally rule on it.
I want to end with if you follow Betsy Russell's Eye on Boise blog on the Idaho Press, she and Kevin, you said it best. She is the master of this, but this is legislative limericks. Talk to me about this, Kevin.
Well, sitting next to Betsy in the press office, you know, she takes delight and pride in her limericks. I mean, she gets this kind of gleam in her eye when she's got a limerick, and she is basically, among other things, she is the poet laureate of the mm-hmm. Of the State House. But what's been interesting, and you can read her limericks if you follow her on Twitter. You can read her column last week was all limericks, and I think we'll have more this
today.
Weekend. Well, I think she's had to post another one today. It's become kind of a thing, not just. It's become a thing also on the House and Senate floors. You had, you know, lawmakers who are speaking to each other, you know, in the procedural, you know, when you have to ask and not to to dispense with further reading of the bill so that you can get to a debate and vote. You've had lawmakers who are expressing those requests in limerick form and haiku form. So, you know, the if nothing else, the creative juices are flowing on the floor of the House. And, It's a bad visual. That came out wrong.
But there is
a lot of poetic license being taken on the House floor.
But I love, though, that this is something Betsy has done for years. And the fact that legislators kind of have emulated that, probably, I would say, not as well as Betsy. But it's great that that has kind of become, a part of this. Either any of you have a limerick?
Kevin's limerick game was pretty good last week, I think.
I'm a cheap knockoff, but because I can find mine more easily than I can find Betsy's, and you really need to read Betsy's because they're better. I was feeling very angst-ridden on Wednesday, and
when Kevin and I edited the editorial pages at the station, we had a firm no poetry rule because almost all poetry you get is bad, and so I just have to say I'm for not hearing any poetry today. I'm still against poetry.
Okay, I'll read one.
Well, guess what's going to happen now?
All right. Should I write a new rhyme or refuse? I struggle to summon my muse. Till the session adjourns, I will be taciturn. So when is too early for booze?
Hey, it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Again, read Betsy's. They're better, much better.
I want to thank all of you for coming in today. My guest today, Bill Manny with Idaho Public Television, Kevin Richert with Idaho Ed News, and Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press.